Cool. Yeah.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Doug. It's great meeting you at Berlin Buzzwords in
Yeah, good to
person.
see you.
Yeah.
Yeah, great to see you.
It's your second time on the podcast, and
Yeah, excited to be back.
yeah, awesome. I think it's like 2 years or maybe one. I
Yeah, I
forgot.
think so.
How have you been? How's it going?
I've been great. Just been doing traditional learning to rank over at Reddit. And it's been a lot of fun. A lot of it's just meat and potato stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that I think is really important, like your training data with search, and your getting your features right and that sort of thing. Not actually too much vector search lately. So kind of paving a path in the ranking model space. And I still think that's really important for if you're building a RAG app or if you're building a lot of these things. A lot of people are sort of discovering this through the vector route. They're like realizing there's this whole other side of information retrieval
Yeah.
that's important. And that's really exciting to me because I think a lot of new ideas and stuff are coming into this space.
Yeah, amazing talk as well. I'm sure we will link it once it's published, the one you just gave. And you also reminded me of time, as I told you, of the time when I was working on Solr, starting at version 1.4. It was itching to ask you which version are you running, but then I was like, what will it matter to me? I'm a product manager, but still.
Well, it's we were running Solr 7 until recently, and one of the things we didn't talk about in the talk was having performance problems with Solr 7,
Yeah.
and moving to Solr 9 fixed it.
Fixed
So
it.
or
Awesome.
helped with a lot of stability and performance problems, and that's just one of those things that a lot of these projects, machine like not just like learning to rank is like a lot of machine learning projects. What I find, especially with learning to rank, you're often like building out and scaling up infrastructure for a certain problem at the same time you're doing machine learning.
Yeah.
So it's you're finding these problems,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we'll spend weeks or
Yeah.
not a, or months like, why is this slow? It's unexpectedly slow.
Yeah.
What's behind it is, and then you realize, oh, Solr 9 doesn't have this problem, and
Right.
then we'll resolve it by,
Yeah.
and we were already upgrading, so we're like, okay, we can put this. We don't have to
Yeah.
stress out about this performance problem. But that's why it takes a year, 2 years
Yes.
sometimes for these projects to
Yeah.
start to show payoff.
Yeah. I also would like to say thank you for your project that I think you started back at OSC, Open Source Connections, called
Yeah.
Hello LTR,
Yeah.
which I think is still out there on
It's
GitHub.
a great project,
Yeah,
yeah.
it really allowed me to quickly, jump on the train and start moving because I was actually alone on the team. I
Yeah.
did do search before, but it wasn't related to ML at all, right? It was like feature engineering, but on a different side of things. And
Yeah.
so thanks for that, really.
Yeah. I think it's really important. And one thing I think it's good, like career advice that's helped me is to learn in public. So a lot of Hello LTR came up when I was learning how to do LTR. And I had to get some examples and like try different things out. And then as I made mistakes, those mistakes became lessons for the
Yeah.
LTR training that came out of
Yeah.
Hello LTR, also called Hello LTR, that Open Source Connections
Yeah.
does. So it's I really encourage people, like the best teachers are often people actively learning,
Yeah.
because you will encounter the mistakes that the experts forgot about. Like,
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you about how to learn how a loop works in Python
Yeah.
because I've done
Yeah.
it too long. But the person who would have the empathy to teach that really well to someone learning from
Yeah.
scratch would be probably my son if he was learning Python for the
Yeah.
first time. So
Yeah.
I really encourage, like, be out there speaking, blogging,
Yeah,
that kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
thing, because you'll have insight into how to teach a problem
Yeah.
that an expert won't. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another side of your professional life that amazes me is that how do you find time to blog so it's like and those are really deep things sometimes. You go into detail whether it's code or you offer some thought model. Like, do you sleep at all?
I think I just have a high tolerance for making mistakes in public.
Oh my, yeah,
So,
amazing.
and also I think a lot of it has to do with having a history degree.
Oh,
So
really? I
when
didn't
you,
know that. History
yeah,
degree.
so history and computer science. So when you do history, it's a lot of writing, writing a
Yes,
report, reading,
yes.
writing. And then a lot of it's also when you get to this, your senior level history, it's like not just writing an essay, but can you write your argument in a single page?
Yeah.
And so that's, which is funny because you think when you're a student, you think I'm going to make the margins big and I'm going
Yeah.
to make the text big so I can take up more space.
Yeah.
But when you start writing a lot, you tend to get really verbose. And
Yes.
then you have to learn to make your arguments like
Exactly.
sharper
Yes,
and
exactly.
shorter and
Yeah.
pithier. So.
Yeah, it also now when I'm doing the product management role, I do not have a history degree like you, but I have to write some things, in a concise way. And sometimes they
Yeah.
say you have to remove half of that page because you're not fitting
I know.
the page limit, you know?
I make that mistake all the time where you're like, how many one pagers are actually
Exactly.
like 10 pages,
And
right?
another thing is like never talk about hypothetical future because you don't even know yourself whether it will happen or not, right?
Yeah.
Only talk about things that you're absolutely certain have happened or you're certain that they are planned already, right? That's how we
Yeah.
do in
Yeah.
product management. So
Yeah.
it teaches that side of things. But I guess what I do miss out, and I then go to blogging and I use you as a great example there. You go and unleash yourself in blogging and you write what you want, right? But you still need to, what you once said that you became more successful blogger the moment you actually started modeling that specific person you're writing to, not an abstract audience and not yourself, because you're not writing for yourself. Is this how you still perceive it?
Well, I definitely write to myself 6 months from now, but I also write the audience I imagine is like a close group of friends. So I almost think about blogging as sometimes, and this is easy. It's easy for people often to imagine sitting down and writing a long email or Slack message. And what if you just turn that into a blog post?
Yeah.
And to me, that's an inspiration for, because so many times you get excited about something and
Yeah.
you want to send a message to your friends
Yeah.
and share it. Well, turn that enthusiasm and that message into a blog post, and then those are the best blog posts. And I also think it's really important to remember it's blogging. It's like it's a step above writing a social media post. It's very informal. Don't take it too seriously. You will make mistakes.
Exactly.
You will it's and it's do it for fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do it a lot because I want I think there's a meme of like someone starting out on something,
Yeah.
someone being very senior and then or someone being like mid-career and then someone super senior in their career. And often the like starting out this meme starting
Yeah.
out super senior are the same.
Yeah.
And it's like my version of that is doing when you start out, you code and do stuff to impress your friends,
Yeah.
like in high school or whatever. And then you get like all worried about like having some big impact and
Yeah,
like impressing the whole world. And then when you get super senior again, you're just like, I just want to like do cool stuff to impress my friends.
yeah,
And which actually turns out also to be stuff that the whole
yeah,
world cares about
yeah.
because usually your friends are like doing cool stuff themselves, like vector search
Yeah,
or doing cool
yeah,
AI stuff.
yeah.
So it turns out that the rest of the world finds that interesting too. But I think that's a really important thing to have an authentic voice.
Yeah.
So,
It's also part of building up your profile, I'm imagining. So I think like Steve Jobs, I think said like computer is a bicycle for the mind, right? And so blogging is also in a way bicycle for the mind. You
totally.
have to really work yourself
Yeah.
up, right? It's also the programming that you do on the site, like search array. So tell me more about
Yeah.
what was the motivation? Why did you start working on it?
So I think I like to go against the grain a little bit. So I actually had worked on different versions of vector search for a long time before this current craze, different hacks and things to make vector search work in the solar Elasticsearch world. So everyone's doing vector search, and I decided that in part because I wanted to do a little bit more native programming, get back. So I used to do that a lot. I used to be a C programmer. I found that vector search is very welcoming to the machine learning engineer data science community, but the traditional lexical search engines like Solr and Elasticsearch, they're very weird.
Yeah.
They're very like, you have to know this weird query DSL, you have
Yes.
to understand these things, tokenization. So I wanted to take that. And take that lexical world and bring it into a data science or high data sort of environment that is very comfortable to machine learning people and data science.
Yeah.
So I built Search Array, With Search Array, the reason I built that, what that does is it's basically a lexical extension to pandas. So if I have text, I can make a pandas column that's just like tokenized text. And then I can ask it to score against a keyword and get a BM25 score. And the main reason I built this was so in a Colab notebook or something, I can quickly prototype ideas without having to stand up Solr, Elasticsearch, or think about Docker containers and all this stuff. And instead, I could see like, okay, I want to tokenize things a certain way. I want to score, change the BM25 scoring to be a certain way. Which is, if you think about like 90% of what you do in a lexical search engine is tweaking the tokenization, changing the scoring, trying to index something new and search against that, like, oh, I have entity recognition field now. And the other thing is with the other thing you do a lot in lexical search engines is I want to boost by recency. I want to do these other things. And a lot of these things can just be done with a really fast, like I take this column, numerical date column in pandas. I take a score, a NumPy array that's a BM25 score. I multiply them together. I have a score that's a recency weighted score. What does that look like in terms of my offline metrics?
Oh, interesting.
Without having to go off to like you figure out Elasticsearch and like that esoteric stuff.
So basically, it allows you to try out some ideas really quickly, right? But then there will be some kind of offset compared with the reality because tokenizers and Solr probably work differently, right? They have, but
They'll be different.
it probably will be close enough, right? So
Close
if you
enough.
nail the signal that, like you explained today in your presentation, you know, what about a number of comments or what about, you know, the recency and so on, like all of this being
You can just
orthogonal
like try that really
bring,
quickly. And a lot of times it's a big effort to index some new data into the search engine, right? Like you have to go, is the upstream system fast enough to handle this load? Am I going to stay up to date? And really, to justify a project, you might start with a prototype and say, okay, I just pulled for a small test set of data. I pulled in some data. It seems like there's some signal here. Let's plan a project around it. And so this is to me, and actually MICE's the conference after Berlin Buzzwords, I'll talk about planning. But to me, a lot of this, like how do we build better prototypes to build plans and have ideas and have conversations between engineers, data scientists, and product managers is really one of the inspirations for Search Array. Because to do this before, it'd be like, okay, I have to stand up some example search system.
Spend time on that and
Yeah, how am I going
ask
to
someone
index this
to allocate
data?
a cluster and whatnot, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I actually, this reminded me when I was working on learning to run, and this was the last project I did in my 10-year tenure at AlphaSense. I said, hey, can I have this really expensive laptop? So it would be like 30 gig RAM and 1 terabyte drive. I thought I need so much disk space for some reason. And it was SSD. And I got it approved. It was like, oh my God, so many thousands, you know. And I spent like a year working on it. And it was kind of like bloated version of Search Array because I could do everything on the laptop,
Oh, cool.
disconnected, right? The only problem I remember was cracking my experiment tree because I would like, what's the right word, bifurcate or like kind of branch out
That's
and go
true.
and then like, okay, should I go back now because retreat because looks like I went down the rabbit hole and it doesn't give add any value, so I need to go back to that state when it was that bigger, you know, NDCG or whatever, right? So and start off from there.
That sounds a lot of like what some of the functionality in Qpid, the sort of like search relevance tuning tool, Queepid. Because I remember when I was building that many years ago, it was very much like every time you submit, like you tweak the query and it saves that as a try and then another try. You can't fork off stuff, but you can go back and be like, oh, this thing didn't work out. I'm gonna go back. And it is funny how, I have the same feeling. And even in a notebook environment, I don't have that because notebooks, you tweak a little bit, you forget what happened. You're like, why did I thought my NDCG was good and it got bad? What did I do wrong? You wish that you were like, somehow the notebook was like versioning itself as you were going along. And like somehow the whole environment was versioned, but yeah, that doesn't exist. I wish that kind of thing existed. That would
No,
be
Yeah,
Amazing.
there was a tool we were using, but then it was acquired by
Oh.
some company. It was called Spell.run. So it basically was like a integrated Python notebook environment that
Oh,
runs on the
cool.
cluster. And they were heading in the direction. I was giving a lot of feedback to them, like,
Oh,
hey,
cool.
can you actually build an infrastructure which will allow me to also, maintain my branched out, experiment, space? And I think
Yeah.
they got acquired probably short before they could do this, and probably they continue doing this. I don't know. But there is another project called DVC, I think, which allows you to
Oh, cool.
basically maintain your experiments as Git hashes, right? So you basically you
Oh,
can Git
nice.
hash your code along with your data, and then you upload your data, let's say, to some cloud, I don't know, drive, some drive, abstract one. And then you have your code associated with that. So you can
Nice,
basically
nice.
restore, you or someone else
Nice.
can restore the experiment. I think if that was frictionless, right? Or even the matter of it existing, right? Because I had to literally like write something down on a piece of paper to remember what I need to do. Sometimes I would go crazy actually.
At Shopify, so we had our testing search testing infrastructure, the notebooks, so everything was in a monorepo. So you could stand up Elasticsearch, and you could have, we had a, because this was a Rails environment, there's a, all the relevance logic was in a Ruby library that the Rails monolith would load and
Yeah.
would call, and then that would call Elasticsearch and do whatever pre and post processing. But when we stood up this test environment, we would say we wanted to load this, we wanted to load the right configs, but we would basically put the commit hash
Yeah.
of the repo that we that it was supposed to be, and it would load the config and
Oh,
everything from that
amazing.
commit hash. But yeah, it's getting reproducible environments and experiments is a challenge.
Yes, this is where, I mean, at some point, basically, like your experiment rate will be, trumped by how quickly you can deploy this or how quickly you can like shuffle things, right? Or reignite things. So, like, this is where infrastructure comes as a big topic. And in your talk, I think you spent a good deal.
Totally. I think
It's like partnership, right? So,
you have to
right there.
do, there has to be like a big theme in my career too is partnerships, like partnerships with PM, partnerships with data, partnerships with infrastructure. You really have to have one cohesive team, and one of the anti-patterns is when they're so separate
Yes,
that it creates,
I agree.
you have to throw a requirement over the fence, and then a month later, maybe you get something back, but it's not quite what you want. You really have to act like one team. And search is so multifunctional that, and I've seen it at Shopify. The challenge was like infrastructure was a different org. And so we would throw things back and forth over the fence and be not quite right what we wanted. We'd have to figure out the right way to partner. At Reddit, it's a bit more, we have a bit more of a challenge that data is a different group. So we're sort of throwing things over the fence, getting things back. And so we have to like actively work to make sure those partnerships are like are healthy. But it's a big challenge. And I think like organizationally, there are reasons that companies separate things out that are beyond search. So it's not like there's a easy solution, but it's
Correct.
definitely when you get to search or these data products, like not just
Yeah.
search, but recommendations and feeds and
Yeah.
things, these become having cross-functional partnerships, and not only cross-functional partnerships, but individuals who can work beyond their domain and get
Yeah,
comfort, like wear
exactly.
multiple hats, is really important.
Yeah, I think you are absolutely spot on, and in back in the previous company, big client of Silo AI and now TomTom, I feel sort of like the same. But one thing I found after like breaking some arrows in the beginning, I found that if you can try to find that mutual benefit
Yeah,
that
totally.
they will be driven as well as you don't know what's the outcome going to be because experiments are always like that, right? But the fact that we are having an experiment cross department, this is amazing. Then you go to all these meetings with executives and you say, you praise them and they probably somewhere praise you, like your team. And that's how you get the ball rolling, right? But
I think that's
things
smart.
happen. Things happen. You just need to be persistent, I guess.
Yeah, things happen all the time. And like, organizational changes are like the weather. You never know,
Exactly.
there's going to be a reorg or
Yeah.
someone comes in with a new perspective or whatever. And that's another career lesson is
Yeah.
like not to get too caught up like emotionally,
Oh
if something happens,
yeah.
it's not a lot of times it's just out of, so many things are out of your control that are just like
Exactly.
out in the politics or whatever,
Yeah.
or organization changes of an old.
I like this sort of mental model called circles of interest. So in
Yeah,
the
yeah.
very inner one, it's like your direct control. It's probably you, your time, and
Yeah,
whatever, where you
specific
work.
tasks
Yeah,
you're
another
working
one is
on.
like influence. So you cannot control, but you can influence people or things or whatever it is. And then the last one is that even if it bothers you, but you cannot do anything. So it's no
Yeah.
control area.
Yeah.
So you have to accept it or
Yeah.
move on or do something, but
Yeah.
don't get stuck on that. So
Yeah,
it ha
totally.
it ha it
Totally.
and things of course keep moving between the so it's just like dynamic system, but still good to be aware of it.
Yeah,
I'm
totally.
sure with your way of blogging and book writing and all
Yeah,
these
yeah.
projects, you actually have that way of kind of, okay, if this is stuck, I'm going to, release stress by blogging, even though writing is
No,
a
you're
bit
right.
stressful as
I
well,
do
still.
think like the other career advice is like you hyper focused on one thing, you lose the forest for the trees.
Yes.
And take a step back. Maybe there's a project that you really like that got canceled or something.
Yes.
We'll take a step back first of all, in a year you won't remember, but there are so many interesting things to work on, and I think people forget that there's so many interesting things to work on. And I had a brief break between Shopify and Reddit, and I realized what life would be like when I was retired, because I would get up and it's not like I just laid around and nothing. I was just like, oh, what could I play with? What could I
Yeah.
do? Oh, there's this
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
interesting problem. There's that
Yeah.
interesting
Yeah,
problem.
yeah.
And that really opens your eyes to that. There's sort of like more fish in the sea, so to speak, of like
Yeah.
problems to work on
Yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
cool stuff. So.
Yeah, there was even a study that when people retire because they got money or like a lottery or some otherwise, they go enjoy life, but they also age much quicker.
Yeah.
And sometimes they unfortunately die quicker because
Yeah.
they have
Yeah.
nothing to sort
You
of,
strive for.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so that's really cool advice. And if this was not enough, all this Cupid, search array, blogging, of course, work and other things, podcasting now. You also write a book. Tell me a bit more about that before we close. I
Oh,
was just thinking
yeah.
it's you just joked on the stage that the idea came to you
Uh-huh.
2018.
Yeah, so Trey initiated the book. So Trey's the primary author,
Yeah.
and Trey came to me and I think 2018 said, "Hey, I want to let you know I'm writing a search book. I think I'll be done, and I want to really, for work and my wife and everything and family, I want to be done in 6 months to not stress everyone out." And here we are. There was a pandemic. There was a lot of stuff that
Of
happened,
course.
but it's 2024, and it's funny because the nature, what you might refer to as AI in 2018, of course, is now is LLMs and these things. But it's really exciting. I think like a lot of the things in the book are timeless
Yes.
techniques.
Awesome.
We initially focused the book on solar, but we took a step back and we said, let's make this applicable to many search engines.
Yeah.
And there are examples being worked on for many platforms because the ecosystem is so huge now. There's all kinds of vector databases that are even adding lexical search, and then there's of course Solr, Elasticsearch, there's OpenSearch, there's
Yeah.
Vespa
Yeah.
in this more and more traditional space. And so like I worked primarily on the learning to rank content,
Yeah.
and so a lot of the things about how you get training data or train a model or how you evaluate these things, how you expose users to search results that are maybe a bit novel, like you do a little of exploration to build out your training data. All of these things are, regardless of where search goes or where RAG
Yeah.
goes or whatever, it's they're still very relevant. And it feels like, in a way, a lot of how users are interacting with the world and with products is through some kind of search or some
Yeah.
kind of retrieval
Yeah.
system.
Yeah.
even if it's a recommendation system or a feed system, that's becoming feeling more like search, where it's like real time, and I'm getting the stuff updated in real time. And of course, RAG is search, so I think search is
Still
just
there, right?
taking over the world in a lot of
Kicking the
ways.
can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
I realized some crowd is now gathering to have lunch, and we will have lunch soon as well. It's always a pleasure to talk to
Yeah,
you
for sure.
there, and finally in person. I think we've never met, but I think if you've been to Lucene Revolution in 2013 around in Ireland
Oh,
in
yeah.
Dublin,
I
I've
remember
been
that.
there as
Was
well.
that the one in San Diego or
No,
the
in
Barcelona?
Dublin, in Dublin.
Dublin, yeah.
Have you
Okay.
been there?
Yes, I was in Dublin. Yeah.
Then I didn't dare to to go high, but
That's when we introduced Cupid, actually, I think. It was
Oh,
me and
that's
a
amazing.
coworker. Yeah, and that's a still a relevant project,
It's
even though it's running 2013 JavaScript state of the art.
and I've been consistently deploying it in every company I
Great.
go. So in TomTom, we just released the new algorithm to production thanks to Cupid in 2 weeks.
Oh,
Within
that's
two
awesome.
weeks, it was on the bookshelf for quite some time because the team couldn't figure out how to test the quality. And I said, okay, let's just do labeling, right? And let's use Cupid,
Yeah,
and
just do
that's
some
it.
simple labels and
And
iterate.
we
That's the
saw like
very
more than
under.
10% increase in precision with new algorithm. And I said, as a product manager, I approve the release. Let's go.
That's awesome.
So
That's great.
thanks for creating the tool.
Great. Sure. Happy to. I love making tools.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Doug. Enjoy
Cool.
the conference
Thank
and go
you.
stay in Berlin.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks.